My grandfather was inspiration to me all my life, even though he passed away when I was quite young. But living right there on the farm, I spent all my time with him. And he was a master barn builder. In other words, a farmer would lose his barn due to lightning or wet hay or something. And my grandfather, in the wintertime, when all he had to do was milk the cows, would cut the framework for a new barn for them. And, of course, I was too young to be in on any of the barn raising. But my old cousin told me the story that he was 16 or 17 years old and took off a couple days off school to help with the last barn raising that my grandfather cut. And he said all he carried with his auger and a bucket full of wooden pegs and a mallet to drive him with. And then he'd take a saw with him. And he said in 2 days the whole framework was up on the barn, ready for the roof and the siding. My grandfather was done. He was finished. But that last barn that Grandpa built still standing. And so Mark's house over there is, that's all frame, knees, mortise and tendon, wood pegs, the whole thing. We built the whole thing here in the shop and put it up in third day. We had the roof on it. That's how fast it went up.
Amazing.
But Grandpa was, he was a good mechanic, I mean, as far as his hands and so forth. But he made his money raising tobacco. He ran this farm for a captain in the Civil War. And who was non-resident. He just spent a month or so on the farm in the summertime. And my grandfather had built the house that I was born in between the time he was 19 and 21. And he just got the house done. Captain Pettit came and stayed there for a month or so that summer. And when he got ready to leave, he said to my grandfather, "Why don't you buy this farm from me?" My grandfather says, "I'd love to buy it, but I haven't got any money." He says, "You don't need any money." He says, "I know you can make the farm pay for itself." So they arrived at a price, and he saddled up a horse and went across lots and proposed to my grandmother that same evening. He made the deal for the farm. And by the time he was 25, he had it paid for. And he was quite wealthy when he passed away. But he unfortunately passed away prostrate cancer at 56 years old.
Huh.
So I spent all my time with him, but I didn't get to know him as well as I would have liked to. I knew an awful lot about him because my grandmother lived with my parents in her later years. And I should have worked closer at it because I forgot all my German. But she and I, we speak German when we're together. But he was quite a guy. The farm was 130 acres, and you couldn't fill a 5-gallon pail with stone on the whole farm.
Oh, wow.
All nice loam. And you could raise anything on that farm. And I worked there all through my years growing up, worked for my uncle during the summer, and anytime he needed me on a weekend. So it was home. But of course I was working, flying for a living then. And but my, probably one of the things that got me interested in flying was the part of the farm that was on the Seneca River Flats, and they were nice long fields, 3,000 foot long. And when the old Syracuse Amboy Airport was, actually as a crow fly, was only 3 miles away, and they'd bring the students over there and practice horse landings, approaches in the fields on the farm. So I was always seeing standards and birds going by when they'd pull up on a missed approach. But I landed in all the fields that I dreamed of landing on as a kid and later on in life.
By accident?
No, yes, at times. I was test pilot for Franklin, and I knew these fields, and so if I had something that I wasn't quite sure of, I kept the fields in range. One of the first exciting things that happened to me in aviation was in 1928, Lindbergh took the Spirit for a tour all over the country, as you know. Krause Heinz in Syracuse, who up until probably the mid-50s made all the airport lighting that was used in the country, maybe a lot of it in the world, they built two huge floodlights. They were, I guess they were 10 foot in diameter, with these huge reflectors, of course. And on the old Amboy Airport had one on each side of the runway. And I've landed them myself many times, because until they decommissioned the airport, they were still, they could still snap them on if you asked. The power could snap them on. And we did like landing in broad daylight. Lindbergh was, they made these lights for Lindbergh. Well, that was the story. Of course, they had them all set to dry out. I don't think they ever sold a lot of them to airports, but they installed these two there at Amboy. And I can still see just as vividly as if it was last evening, the Spirit of St. Louis in his forward slip coming into the light. He comes right down until the wingtip is about this far off the ground. The wings come level. He comes on the three-point landing. And, of course, he got out and so forth. And that was it. My parents took me home. Well, back in the 50s, I went to work for Race New York in 49. And Mr. Brace was on there. So, it was the board that controlled who got materials in World War II.
Mm.
And of course, he had to live in Washington, leave his own company to them take that job. And he knew a lot of people, so I was in and out of Washington for just overnight, quite often. And we usually leave like 2:30 in the afternoon to get home, make dinner. And I'd head for the Smithsonian. And I'd be there in the morning, and I got to them to know that they'll unlock the door at 10 o'clock. And I'd be there at 10 o'clock to get in the Smithsonian with it open before there was any crowd in there. And I guess I'd been to the Smithsonian two or three times, but this one morning I got in the conversation with the custodian about the spirit hanging just inside the door. And he says, let me show you something. He went over, and here was a screen over in the corner, and a chair sitting there. He says, that's Colonel Lindbergh's chair. He says, when he's in town, he'll come to the entrance, service entrance, or call the night before. He says, I'll let him in. He said, he'll sit there, look at the spirit for 10 or 15 minutes when he gets time to open. He said he'll get up and leave, and every time he gets up to walk with me to the door, when I open the door to the public, he'll look up at it and say, I still can't believe I made it. That was silly. Well, I'm there at, oh, probably maybe a year later, at the door waiting for it to unlock. The door unlocks, and my God, who out steps out the door, but Colonel Lindbergh. And I said, good morning, Colonel. And somebody recognized him and said, good morning, Colonel, kind of set him up. And I said, you remember landing in a floodlight at the Amboy Airport in Syracuse in 1928? Yes, he says. I said, well, I saw you land there. And he says, well, sit down. We sat down and visited on the steps of Smithsonian for about 20 minutes until somebody come along and recognized him, and then he left. He just didn't, he was fine, because I was familiar with something that he had done and mentioned it to him. And I described watching him land. And he says, land the old spirit without being able to see out front, he says, a little bit of a trick.
That's right, right.
And so that was my one and only with Lindbergh.
So what happened after high school? Did you go into working for the engine company, Franklin?
No, I got my ratings. Was an apprentice training school, and you asked me how I had to learn to fly.
Yeah.
I got acquainted with everybody on the airport, private owners for airplanes, and Paul Wilcox made me sort of a lead lead boy amongst the students. There was, I get probably maybe 30, and he gave me 7 or 8 students, and I was kind of farming over them. And he'd let me bring an airplane, other people's airplanes, into the school and to work on. And in return, he knew what was going on. In return, they'd give me flying time in their airplane. And I sold it 2.5 hours. Actually, I sold in a J-2 Cub, but I had quite a lot of time in other airplanes that were unofficial. Kenner Birds and Kenner Standards and the old biplanes. But I had my AMP written, passed, and my private written passed before my 18th birthday. So my private and my both A&P licenses were issued within a week after I was 18 years old. And about 3 months later, I had my commercial passed and had enough flying time because I was flying. I had flying time coming from 6 different private owners at the airport. And I had, one summer, I had 32 people working for me. And I was, the youngest one was 10 years older than I was. And I was in education as a kid.
How'd you learn to handle that?
Well, this one fellow, he was a good mechanic, but he liked to have a drink with his lunch. And I warned him, and he was late getting back from lunch one day, and I could smell liquor on his breath. And I told Carl what I was going to do. He says, "You do what you have to do." And I told him he was done, and he said, "Well, I'll go back to plant." And I says, "Go ahead." He went back to plant, found he didn't have a job. And I had no more problems with the rest of the group after that. I had no problems.
So you were a mechanic doing engineering, but were you flying for a living at any point?
Yeah. Everything that I built up, I flew. Sometimes I'd have 7 or 8 airplanes going at one time. I'd get out of one airplane. Heck, I was sometimes flying 10, 11 hours in a day.
Really?
Yeah. Start flying at 6 o'clock in the morning and get through at dark.
But you were flying for development, not for
right.
passenger
right.
or
right.
cargo or anything.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So
that was a fun job. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this whole project is about different ways of learning. So it's hard to know exactly how people are learn today.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you were going to tell young people, maybe your grandkids or something. Yeah. What you would advise them to do to learn or to really develop themselves, what would you tell them to do?
Get a good basic education on what they're interested in before they get in with it.
What do you think that you that you did that you're the most that was the most valuable to you, or you're most proud of, or was the most exciting?
Oh, being getting my mechanic's licenses was a means to an end.
Yeah,
I always wanted to fly, but without a lot of money or any money, being a mechanic was the way to learn to fly, and that cost anything.
Uh-huh.
And but I've always liked it. I enjoy working with my hands and so forth. But I still go in school. I just ordered 3 DVDs from this learning company down in Virginia.
Yeah, right on that. Yeah.
They're college lectures.
Yeah, what did you get?
Great.
Huh? Yeah, I've heard some myself.
I've had several of them, but I just got kind of fascinated. I have a lot of Jewish friends and so forth. I've always just wanted to get the Old Testament and the New Testament, everything clear in my mind.
So uh-huh.
I just bought the History of the English Language.
Oh, I'm glad you told me that, because I wouldn't have expected you did that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He's seeing as you've got plenty to do already in the shop here.
Yeah, well, I felt like a 16-year-old every morning when I got up until the last year.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So you started to feel old just recently.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.